Well, thank you so much, young people. Appreciate that. If you would, turn your Bibles to the Old Testament, to the book of Ecclesiastes. I do want to encourage you to come back this evening, our 6:30 service. Pastor Robert will be bringing the message this evening. And it's a good time for me to say this because he and Sherry have children's worship today. But I hope you appreciate that Robert is a gift to this congregation. He really is. And I want you to appreciate him. And we are to appreciate the Word first and foremost, but it's not wrong to appreciate the worker of the Word. And so I encourage you to be here this evening at 6:30 as he will break the bread for us this evening. I was standing out in the hall this morning prior to Sunday school. And by the way, if you weren't in Sunday school, I hope you'll come next week. But I was standing out in the hall greeting those who were coming in. And in a little while, Audrey Mayo came in and she was carrying Nolan, their little boy. And as she was carrying him, the whole time he was like this. I looked at him and I said, "Buddy, what are you thinking?" It looked like he was in a thought. You know, he was really pondering something. Now, only the Lord knows what the little mind was thinking about. Very likely it was, "Uh-oh, I know this route. Mom's getting ready to leave me in the nursery," you know. It's amazing how quickly they get to understand that routine, that schedule. Well, as we have entered into this journey through the book of Ecclesiastes, perhaps by now you've come to appreciate that in a sense, like little Nolan, we find Solomon meditating, or we could title this the musings or the meditations of King Solomon concerning the various issues of life. And what you may have already noticed also is that he apparently was not the least bit interested in compiling some well-organized or systematic composition, because he will go from one thought to another. Now, some of us do that, don't we? We've got one thought for a moment, and we'll time out there, and we'll go to another thought, right? I've got a 15-year-old grandson who does that every day. I mean, he's got his mind is all over the place. And so as we work through this book, it might not be as neat and orderly as we would prefer, and you will find he's at this one topic, and then he's over at this topic, and you will say, "Solomon, how did you bridge the gap? How did you go from that to this?" But Solomon never did ask our input, did he? He just put it together as he did. Well, this 8th chapter is something like that. There's 3 primary thoughts or subjects or topics that are in this 8th chapter. Now, I've titled this, "Who is Like the Wise?" Because that comes out of verse 1. That's the question that Solomon's going to ask. But after he asks that question, then he begins to address these 3 different matters. And you kind of look like, well, where's the link? Where's the connection here? But they're there nonetheless, and thus we must address them as they are. Because he's first of all going to deal with matters concerning government. That excites you, I know. But then he's going to go from the government to the grave. Somebody here might say, "Well, I think I could make a connection there." Right? But government, he's going to talk about death, grave. But then he will bring us to the ways of God. And I'm glad he does it like that. We will labor over matters of government, matters about the grave, but then most precious and most important, matters about God. And so in verse number 1, he said, "Who is like a wise man? And who knows the interpretation of a thing? A man's wisdom makes his face shine, and the sternness, the boldness of his face is changed." Now, there's some softening, some mellowing here that is depicted in this statement. Now, I would remind you that Solomon has been telling us all along of this pursuit in his personal life in this matter of wisdom. in chapter 7 and in verse 25, he said this. He said, I applied mine heart to know and to search and to seek out wisdom and the reason of things. And so with this analytical mind that we've been noticing about him, that's what he's doing. The reason about things in life. You know, God gave us a brain. God gave us the capacity to ponder, and we ought to do that. You know, there are some folks who have the idea that you know, your mind, you just need to be very open-minded. I read a saying years ago that said, some minds are so open they need to be closed for repair. But we need to ponder on good things and the right things. And Paul addresses that in Philippians about thinking about things that are noble and pure and true and honest, a good report. And so Solomon is seeking and searching out these things. And so in verses 2 through 5, first of all, he's going to teach us that it is wise, because the question is, who's wise? Who's like the wise man? And he's going to teach us in these few verses that it is wise to respect the role of government. Now, he is writing from the position of a monarch, of a king, who would speak, and it was done. It was executed by order of the king. Let's read it now. He says, I say, keep the king's commandment for the sake of your oath to God. Now, translation is different here. Some have of oath to God, but then some also speak of God's oath to him. Do not be hasty to go from his presence. Do not take your stand for an evil thing, for he does whatever pleases him. Where the word of the king is, there's power. In other words, authority. And who may say to him, what are you doing? He who keeps his command will experience nothing harmful. And a wise man's heart discerns both time and judgment. So the king here is speaking to the people about their relationship with their government, and in particular, in that case, with their king. And he said, you know, it's wise of you to be in a good relationship and to respect the role of government. Now, again, there's two different takes about this matter of the oath, of their oath to God and God's oath to the king. Let me just remind you of a passage where it's concerning King David, Solomon's dad. It's over in 2 Samuel 5. I'll show it to you. Verses 1, 2, and 3. It says, then all the tribes of Israel came to David at Hebron and spoke, saying, indeed, we are your bone and your flesh. Also in time past, when Saul was king over us, you were the one who led Israel out and brought them in. And the Lord said to you, you shall shepherd my people Israel and be ruler over Israel. Therefore, all the elders of Israel came to the king at Hebron, and King David, now note, made a covenant with them at Hebron. So that sounds like some oath language here. There's a league that is established, a covenant between the king and the people. But note, it says also before the Lord. And they anointed David king over Israel. So there was this formal event whereby the people acknowledged, David, you're our king. We enter into this covenant with you before the Lord. And so it was a very important moment of recognizing the role of their government in their lives. And the Bible is very careful and clear about teaching this to us, that for the Christian, there is the spiritual dimension of this, of our relationship, of our acknowledgement, of even our respect for the role of government in our life. Perhaps the best passage that deals with this is that of the Apostle Paul. Now, when Solomon wrote, he wrote in the environment, in the situation of a monarchy. But now when Paul wrote to the believers in Rome, in Romans chapter 13, he was writing in the situation of the Roman Empire, of the Emperor Caesar. And of course, it even adds more amazement to what he will say here. Romans chapter 13, verse 1. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. See, that gives significance, doesn't it? Now, he was saying that to people who were being ruled by very cruel emperors. And yet he says, there is in your life a need to acknowledge there is the role of government. It can be, obviously, it can be perverted. It can be used in a wrong way. People can even suffer. But there is the design of government for the good of mankind. So verse 2, he says, therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God. And those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is God's minister to you for good. Do you not hear the significance of these words? But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister. Twice he said that now. An avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore, you must be subject, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For because of this, you also pay taxes. For they are God's ministers attending continually to this very thing. Render therefore to all their due, taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. So see what King Solomon said long ago, that it's good to have a relationship of respect with government. Paul would come behind and give us doctrinal reasoning for that. That government is actually designed and intended by God, intended for our good. Can evil men corrupt government? Obviously so. Can government be used in a cruel and a tyrannical way? Obviously so. But still, there is the design of government by God. We understand from Holy Scripture there are three institutions God has given to the human race. The first one he gave in Genesis is what? Marriage. Thus the family. The second he gave was government. And the third we know is the church. These are three God-given institutions that are for our good. Can wrong be found in any of them? Obviously so. The church to this day still has her spots and wrinkles. The Lord is still working on his church. Family. Can the family have its problems? Obviously so. And so in like manner is the matter of government. But there's still a good that is intended by God. God has designed it for our good. Authority is much better than anarchy, isn't it? You remember over in Judges twice we are told in those days there was no king in Israel. And every man did that which was right in his own eyes. That is not a pleasant thought if applied to America. What would take place if everyone did what was right in their own eyes? So there is the spiritual dimension. It is of God. But then also as Christians, we have a social duty. We are citizens. We just camped around this last Sunday talking about being citizens of an earthly kingdom as well as of a heavenly kingdom. But we are citizens here and we have a social duty. The Apostle Paul said in 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 1 and 2, therefore, I exhort, first of all, that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings and all who are in authority. Now note, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. In other words, the body of Christ, the church, the redeemed, the born again Christians who are in the United States of America have a God-given responsibility to pray for those in leadership. From local to national, we have an obligation. It is the will of God for us to pray for all who are in authority. And yet, what has God intended behind that? Why should we so pray? It's God's desire, Paul wrote, that we may lead a quiet, peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. You see, God intends it for our good. Do you know in the preamble of our Constitution are these words, "We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union." Note it did not say to form a perfect union, but a more perfect union. "Establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America." You see, it is for our benefit. It is for our good that God has given us this order that we call government. So Solomon teaches, hey, who is like the wise man? Well, one way I can think of that you can show yourself wise is to respect the role of government. Now, again, we have our part. We have our responsibility. One of the great responsibilities we have is to vote, right? To vote. Let me ask, are you registered to vote? I heard about a pastor, it was a couple of years ago, I was told about it. Pastor of a very strong congregation. And there is a means by which you can find out how many are registered to vote. And so he went through the process for his congregation. And to his great disappointment, a large number of his members were not even registered to vote. It was not a question whether they had voted or not. They had not even taken the time to register to vote. Oh, beloved. Woe be unto us if we in this country, where we have far, far more liberty and freedom than the times that Paul wrote in Romans 13, and we do not carry out that basic responsibility as a citizen of this country. Don't you allow cynicism to keep you away from voting. Don't you allow some foolish thought, well, my vote will not count. You multiply that by the millions of Christians that are in this country, and that attitude might be behind some of the problems we've got in this country today. And so I challenge you now, between now and the fall election, do what you ought to do. And that is go and register. Register whatever party you want to. You can be non-affiliated, but register to vote. And then follow that up by voting as best you can with the help of God. But do that. It's a wise thing to do. We know there is a large percentage of the population in this country. If they get their way, every immoral thing under the sun just about can happen. We keep hearing in the news of all these outlandish things that are happening. We need Christians to do that basic duty. Vote. May God give you the worst case of indigestion under the sun if you do not follow through with this responsibility. But it is serious. It really is. Look at these children walking around here. Some of you and I, the choir a while ago was singing, "Soon I'll come to the end of the journey." We're not far from it. What about these little boys and girls you saw standing up here a while ago? What about it? What are they going to inherit? They don't have a vote today, do they? Except yours. It's the only vote they've got. What are they going to inherit? We have watched the erosion in our lifetime. We've watched it. We're a country that kills unborn babies. We're a country where the Supreme Court has redefined what God defined a long time ago, marriage. These boys and girls didn't have a vote in that. All kind of wickedness prevails today. We see the sense, we see the inclination of our society that is bent on just absolutely incredible, immoral things. What stands in the gap Jesus one time said, you are the salt of the earth. He said, you're to be the light of the world. Salt and light, one thing they both have in common is they make a difference. The absence of salt, some of you have to do that now. God bless you. I feel sorry for you. I'd quit eating grits today if I had to do without salt. Starch would have to be gone. I can't imagine potatoes without salt. But some of you have to do that because of your health. And you know salt made a difference. Light makes a difference. That's you. That's me. That's who we are today in this world. So Solomon says, who's like the wise? Respect the role of government. But then he turns almost 180 degrees in verse 6 through 9. He says, because for every matter there is a time and judgment, though the misery of man increases greatly. For he does not know. Now here's the New King James says, what will happen? So who can tell him when it will occur? No one has power over the spirit to retain the spirit. And no one has power in the day of death. There is no release from that war. And wickedness will not deliver those who are given to it. All this I have seen and applied my heart to every work that is done under the sun. There is a time in which one man rules over another to his own hurt. And what he's contemplating here is the matter of death. And as we go through the book of Ecclesiastes, he brings this subject up quite a bit about the matter of death. And so he's saying to us now, secondly, who is like the wise? Not only the one who will respect the role of government, but the one who will recognize the reality of the grave. Now, I don't think Solomon means that you need to 24/7 think about death and read your will and check out your life insurance and all that thing, you know, all the time. But he also is saying, the time is teaching us, hey, you don't live indifferent to it. You don't live ignoring it or denying it, because it's a very fundamental part. Because two things all human beings have in common. You were born and you're going to die. And you are. And I am. And two simple things are taught by this passage here. One, the timing is unknown. One day I thought I would show a great giant calendar up here and just let it flip and just ask, which one's yours? Where's your date? What month? What year? What day? You know what? We don't know, do we? No one knows. The timing is unknown. Why, the Bible just simply says it like this. Solomon wrote it. Boast not of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. But also the time is unavoidable. And that's what he says here. That there's no one who has the ability to retain the spirit. Now interesting, the word in the scriptures that is translated spirit is also translated wind and breath. And just as you cannot lasso the wind, Solomon is saying you cannot avoid the day of death. It is a power, it is an authority, just like the government has an authority. Now he's talking about another authority in our lives. It's the authority of death. And that when death comes, you will not have the ability. He says there is no discharge. There is no release in that war. You won't get out of it. And you will be the victim of it one day. It will successfully overtake you. It's going to happen. It's a reality. I do think there is something about getting older that you do more and more. Just this morning, Jamie and his boys walked in. And I asked him, I said, have you been feeding this one Miracle-Gro? He's taller than me now. Charlie up there. Everybody look up there. There he is right here. Right. There you go. He's taller than me. I was up the sound this morning speaking to Jim. I said, Jim, I'm feeling my age, brother. Just the other day, I scheduled my first meeting with Hannah and Josh. They're getting married later this year. I married her mom and daddy. Hey, you start feeling it after a while. Hey, it's unknown, but it's also unavoidable, beloved. I'm sorry, but I have my little camp has been real small and my wagon has stayed right around it lately. Oh, Lord, I want to end well. I want to end well. Time is drawing near. And so Solomon said, who's wise? The ones who recognize the reality of the grave. But then, verse 10 through 17, it is wise to remember the righteousness of God. It is wise to remember the righteousness of God. You see, he's going to talk about how that we have a hard time with all the things that are happening in this fallen world. And we just sometimes think, hey, that's not right. That's not the way it ought to be. And yet, it's the way it is in this world. And I tell you what can happen. You can get disoriented because you look at things that are unjust and you look at things that ought to be handled in a just way and treated with honor, and they're not. That things have gotten upside down in this world. And if you're not careful between the flesh and the devil, you can really be the prey, the victim of a major discouragement and despondency. And so I believe Solomon is teaching us in this passage, you need to remember the righteousness of God. Do you remember when the Lord came down and had that conversation with Abraham? It's when the Lord, he's going to judge the five cities of the plain, which included Sodom and Gomorrah. And Abraham, he attempts to intercede. And if you remember, he brought in some numbers and he said, Lord, if there be 50 righteous people, would you spare them? Yeah, I will. And then he got down to 40 and he got all the way down to small number. But then there is this statement made in that interesting conversation. And it said, shall not the judge of all the earth do right? How would you answer that question? Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? What do you say to that? I'm not trying to trick you. Shall not the judge of all the earth? Now, the judge of all the earth is God. Shall not God do what is right? I think my banana sandwich can hold me. I'm not going any further, all right? Shall not God do what is right? That's better. Not good enough. It's really not for you if you're not sold on it. If you're not really in your spirit settled on this matter. God's going to do what's right. Do you hear me? God's going to do what's right. Now, what we do sometimes is we bring our frail, feeble reasoning to the throne of God. In fact, we were having a little communication just the other day about someone else. And I came in, my feeble brain right now won't bring it all together. But I remembered in my reply to my brother Dolan, I said, it's interesting someone would want to stipulate that if God will do what I want, I'll believe in him. Now back up for a moment. What kind of God is that? That if God will bow to me, God, you explain to me why this happened or why that did, then I'll believe in. What kind of God is that? And so my prayer is that the ministry of Tarleton and Baptist Church has some real core values. And this is one of them. God's going to do what's right. I may live in ignorance. Let me back up. I do live in ignorance, all right? My wife is here today, I've got to be honest with you. But really, hear me. My ignorance, my inability to grasp, God's going to do what's right. Let's read. Look, verse 10. He said, then I saw the wicked buried, who had come and gone from the place of holiness, the temple. Now, again, a couple of different translations have, and they were forgotten. Now, some have praised. I'll come back to that in just a moment. In the city where they had so done, this also is vanity. Because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the hearts of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. Was it today? I was talking with someone. Yesterday. We were talking about young people calling into schools with a bomb threat. And of course, it proved to be untrue. I said, they need to deal severely with them who do that. I mean severely. According to their age, but severely. So other youngins don't want to do it. See, that's why he's saying here, but too often it's just the opposite. Things are not speedily carried out, and so it seems to encourage more wickedness. Though a sinner does evil 100 times, and his days are prolonged. Now note, yet I surely know that it will be well with those who fear God, who fear before him, but it will not be well with the wicked, nor will he, that's in reality now, will he prolong his days, which are as a shadow, because he does not fear before God. Verse 14, there is a vanity which occurs on earth, that there are just men to whom it happens according to the work of the wicked. In other words, just people being treated like they're wicked. Again, there are wicked men to whom it happens according to the work of the righteous. See, it's upside down. I said that this also is vanity. So, I commended mirth or enjoyment because a man has nothing better under the sun than to eat, drink, and be merry, for this will remain with him in his labor all the days of his life, which God gives him under the sun. When I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the busyness that is done on earth, even though one sees no sleep day or night, no, go without sleep trying to figure these things out. Then I saw all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. For though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it. Well, let's see if we can try to kind of summarize what we get here from Solomon. In verse 10 and 11, first of all, for a time. Now, do you hear me? For a time, wickedness continues and even worsens. I mean, I believe the Apostle Paul, did he not in 2 Timothy 3, talking about the characteristics of these last days? Pastor Robert had us there just recently. That evil men will go what? Basically from bad to worse, wax worse and worse. The escalating of evil. We see that today, don't we? For a time, wickedness continues and even worsens. You ever heard anybody say, well, I have never in my life. Something like that. The surprise of evil. But verse 13 teaches us in time, wickedness will be condemned. See, this is the heart where Solomon says in verse 13, it will not be well with the wicked. Now, for a time, wickedness continues, right? And worsens. But you see, what fallen man does not appreciate is God has attached a sovereign leash to this world. And in time, wickedness will be condemned. There will come the day. Do you remember in the Gospels, Jesus was ministering to people, and one time he would say, well, in fact, he said more than one time, he would say things like, this is your hour. This is your hour. John 17, if you remember in that great high priestly prayer, praying to the Father, Jesus said, Father, what? The hour is come. That was the hour of redemption, the hour where God would accomplish the great plan of salvation through the suffering of his son, Jesus. See, God has a clock. And Jesus looked at the people one day and said, this is your hour. But you know what? The day will come when the hour will be up. It will not be well for the wicked. Now, in the meantime, wickedness is applauded and preferred. And that's where he says in verse 14, just people are treated as if they're wicked. Wicked people are treated as if they're just. The good is spoken of as evil. Evil is spoken of as is good. That's the upside down world we live in the United States of America today. In the meantime, right now, but now hear me, the truth is that fearing God is right and wise. That's, Solomon says, he said, look, I know the right thing to do is to fear God. Let me give you a verse from Deuteronomy chapter 6. It's a good one. Deuteronomy 6, verse 24. And the Lord commanded us to observe all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God. Now note, for our good always, that he might preserve us alive as it is this day. Oh, parents, mommy and daddy, I do appeal to you. Have this underlying principle in your life that it not only is it right, but it is wise for us to reverence God, to honor God, to obey God, and seek to breed that into your upbringing of your children. All you parents at some time hear these things, but they let their boy do it. You have to have, the word values gets used so much. Virtues would be a better word. But you need to have those principles about your life, about how you run your home, how you operate your home. And there must be in you this conviction. It's right, but it's also it's wise for us to honor God. Do not seek a popularity contest with this. Do not try to figure out what your young'un's peers' parents think about it. You just be like Joshua of old. As for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord. Solomon says, who's wise? Who's wise? You see, it's not just those who respect the role of government. It's not just those who recognize the reality of the grave. But the wise person is the one who remembers the righteousness of God. And our God is righteous, and our God will deal with sin. But now hear me, for his people, God's going to do what he has said. And so the truth is that even when we don't know and we can't understand, God is faithful. When I don't understand, when I don't know, God's faithful. Do we believe that? Now look, we've practiced this thing so many times, you know it by now. Do we believe that?
Yes.
Hey folks, God is faithful. And there's no but to follow that. God is faithful. Let me give you another good verse. Psalm 37, verse 28. For the Lord loves justice. See, he does what's right. He loves justice. He hates injustice. And does not forsake his saints. They are preserved forever. But the descendants of the wicked shall be cut off. I've told you more than one time, I enjoy listening to the National Christian Choir. In my office when I'm sitting, my laptop, I'll have them in the background singing. It's just one of my enjoyments, my pleasure. And the other day they were singing a song, and so I quickly Googled the words. And it's a good song. It was written by Chris Tomlin. And I love these words. Now, I'm not going to sing them. I don't want to mess your lunch up, all right? But look at them. Faithful. Forever you are faithful. Father to the fatherless, you uphold the one who feels forsaken. You are faithful, God. Faithful. Forever you are faithful. Lover of the wounded heart, you defend the poor and the forgotten. You are faithful, God. And I will sing to the maker of heaven and earth. God, you reign forever and your love will endure. Faithful and true is the name of the Lord. You are faithful, God. Faithful. Forever you are faithful. Shelter for the fragile soul. You lift us up. You hold us all together. You are faithful, God. You are there in every season of my soul. You are there. You are the anchor that will hold. You are there in the valley of the shadows. You are faithful, God. Now, did you note those kind of interesting words that Solomon concluded with in verse 15 through 18? I commend mirth or joy to be satisfied and content with your food, to eat, to drink, to be merry, he said. What is Solomon teaching us there? I believe, since he has just addressed how we wrestle with the craziness of this world, wrong is right, right is wrong, and yet knowing down deep it will not go well for the wicked, but it will go well for them who fear God. I believe it's Solomon's way of reminding us that no matter the measure of our wisdom, there will be things that we cannot understand and we cannot explain. And by the way, when you're talking to that cynic, when you're talking to that unbeliever, and they want to come up with those things. Why is there suffering in the world? Why do little children, hey, there's nothing wrong with saying, friend, I don't know. I don't know. That's all right. There's a lot we don't know. And so that no matter the measure of our wisdom, there will be things that we cannot understand and cannot explain. But we must not allow our ignorance and our inability to rob us of our faith and our joy in God. You see, there is enough truth in this book taught about God that we can understand, that will teach us to trust in the Lord with all of our hearts and to rejoice in Him at all times. See, it's not really what we don't know, it's what we do know. What we do know about God. And I appreciate those little children a while ago turning around and looking at the cross. Because, you see, that's what keeps our bearings. It's like the game tetherball, where you got the pole, and the rope, and the ball. God is like that pole established. And we're like the ball. And faith comes from where? Hearing the word of God. Faith connects us like the pole to the ball. Faith connects us to God. I was thinking about the other day, I'm going to preach it one of these days, where Paul said in Acts 27, I believe God. That's the saint's confession. That it shall be, that's the saint's confidence, even as it was told me. That's the saint's comfort. I know that much. I know God enough to know He's trustworthy. Enough to know in the darkness of my ignorance, knowing Him's enough light to carry on. And to carry on with joy. To be like Paul and Silas at midnight singing, praises to God. Solomon said, who's like the wise? Let's pray.